The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall. I play Hera Syndulla on Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to the Secrets of Star Wars podcast. May the Force be with you always.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Hey everyone, I'm Angela Ciolana, and you're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away, from movies to books to TV shows and more. We're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in Star Wars. And today we're diving into the seventh episode of the Acolyte series, entitled Choice. Ooh boy, there were some consequences there with those choices. So let's dive into it. Joining us is, first of all, none other than Master Ikrit, a.k.a. Thomas Salerno. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Angela.
And also we have our very own Captain, John Coral. Hi, John.
Hello.
All right. Well, let's keep our minds fresh on what all happened, because we saw everything else from a certainly different point of view. So this week's episode is summarized on StarWars.com this way. In a return to the past events on Brendok, Master Indata with her Padawan Torbin, the Wookiee Master Kelnaka, and Jedi Knight Sol are on a mission to locate a vergence in the Force. Upon discovering the young twin sisters Osha and Mei and their coven of witches, Sol is compelled to intervene. He fears for the safety of the children, especially after the ascension ceremony leaves Mei with a mysterious mark on her forehead. A shocking discovery about the twins' bloodline spurs a series of events that will change the course of each life on Brendok that night. Convinced that the twins are his ticket home, Torbin succumbs to his own anxieties and rushes back to the fortress, putting the witches on the defense. While they scramble to hold their coven together and protect the children, Mei sets off a blaze, and a battle breaks out that pits Jedi against Jedi, leaving Torbin disfigured. The carnage ends with most of the witches, including Mother Anisea, dead, and the Jedi are left with a terrible secret. I just now realize that that says most of the witches. I thought they all died, but okay.
Yeah. So what?
I got this from StarWars.com, y'all. So what will we see next episode? I don't know. Well, before we dive into all that, let's take a brief moment to recognize the people who make this podcast possible. In your ears, our patrons. Thank you very much to our patrons, including Kendrick B, Alicia E, Gregory B, David P, and Lindsay S. Thank you so much, because SQPN.com is supported by you, and we finally, after a decade, have gotten a facelift on the website. So if you haven't checked that out yet, definitely go check it out. It's brand new this week. And if you're not a patron, would like to help StarQuest continue our mission, we are growing and we need you. So please consider becoming a patron at sqpn.com/give. Okay, guys. So what were your overall first impressions of this episode? Thomas, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, I wish that my moniker, Jedi Master Ikrit, had been there, because I feel like he could have salvaged this mission.
Oh, boy.
But in any case, yeah, I really enjoyed this episode a lot, especially after reflecting on it for a bit. I know last week on the episode I hosted, I was kind of down on the previous two episodes. And, you know, my opinion on the last two episodes haven't changed much. I still think they were kind of depressing, but I can see what they were, you know, sort of building up towards. And this episode does answer a lot of questions that I had, and I thought it was interesting that we get to see, you know, the old Star Wars saw of from a certain point of view, you know,
yep,
really kind of taken to a not so much an extreme, but you do get to see a lot of different points of views from many different characters in this episode. I thought it was complex. I thought that there was just a lot of interesting character motivations and stuff, and you got to see things that were definitely not clear in the earlier episode, episode 3, which was called Destiny, which is clearly paired, you know, with this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one thing, though, I would say I am concerned about is that there are still some sort of unanswered questions, and that we only have one episode left.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll be very interested to see how I am very interested to see how the finale will kind of wrap everything up. And if it's setting up more, either in terms of this show or some other series down the road, because Star Wars has kind of become like Marvel, right? Each series is setting up something for the future. So,
oh boy. Well, John, what do you think? What was your first overall impression of this episode? I think you mentioned you watched it a couple of times. Or
yeah. Well, the first time, I mean, the main thing I saw was, I mean, I liked the episode overall. I liked mm-hmm. how it filled in some of the, well, the different angles that you didn't see in the episode 3, and, you know, say the, you know, why Torben did what he did and all those kind of things. But then, I don't know, I just, as I was watching it, I knew, you knew the Jedi were going to be at fault for part of the, something with all this. It wasn't going to be the whole thing. But then at the same time, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, you know, just, okay, it should be called emotional choices, because everybody's choice, whether it was Mama Anasea, who's like, well, she's my child, and then you have the anger of Mother Anasea,
Coral,
and then Mother Coral has the anger, and then you have, you know, the emotional attachment of Soul, and then, you know, and his fear of all that, you know, and it's just like, there was just so many things where, you know, emotions played, and then when they made those decisions, you know, it's mm-hmm. you could see that's what caused a lot of these issues, it seemed like, where and that's where I liked it overall, but then, like, you know, like Thomas said, it's like they left so many things unanswered, and sometimes when I get frustrated with the series, because I'm like, where are they actually going with this? Or what does this actually mean?
Right. You know, and stuff. Yeah.
And, what does
it mean? What does it mean?
Yeah. So, but overall I enjoyed it, but it was just, and I did like seeing it. And then the second time I saw it, it was just, I noticed more of the emotion and some of the attachment that they were talking about with the, because it seemed like, though, every time you began to like a character, then you would, I mean, it's like, well, Master Andara, I liked her, but then in the end, she had an emotional response too. You know, it's like,
true.
You know, on, you know, how they were going to handle it with the council too and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it was, well, just, go ahead.
Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting to me was how, I was really afraid that, like, that they were going to this thing where, like, the Jedi were just going to do something awful and then just maliciously cover it up. But I feel like this episode, it sort of embodies that phrase, if you have ever heard, never attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like that, where, like, they make mistakes, not due to malice, but like what you said, John, because of emotional decisions, impulsive actions. They're not intending to do anything. Like everyone thinks they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Everybody in this episode thinks they're doing the right thing, and they're all at cross purposes to one another, and it leads to horrible unintended consequences, which I just found very interesting.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, you know how they say at the end of your life, you'll, like, watch your life back? Just, like, how many of those moments will be in my own life where it's just, like, oh, you thought you had great intentions, but look at what happened. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a lot to process. It was very interesting to see everything from a different perspective and to be reminded how easy it is to jump to conclusions and to put your own thoughts and feelings and kind of mirror those, or what is the word I'm looking for? Just put those on other people, you know.
Oh, you like project them.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So let's talk about why this episode was titled Choice. Obviously, we know that there were choices made, but why do you think it was so important for them to call this episode Choice?
Well, I was wondering if it was actually near the end when you're watching Sol with his two hands out trying to save both the twins, and then he can't hold them both, you know, and he makes that decision to go for Osha, and then when he moves his hands both to her, then May falls. And I was wondering if that was the big choice, you know, that they're, you know, in the whole thing, because, you know, he has his attachment to Osha, and he, and then my question is when actually when May comes running back after she sets the fire, he says Osha, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does he think that's Osha at that point then? I'm assuming until he sees her,
her forehead. Yeah.
Yeah. The forehead.
Yeah.
The symbol on it. I was just, that kind of threw me there. But that was my thought, though, was, you know, I mean, obviously there were a lot of decisions, but that seemed to be the biggest one, because they really focused on Sol there trying to do save both and then turning specifically to Osha.
Yeah. I thought that, I mean, that's definitely one big choice. And you could almost argue that maybe the whole, everything that happened on Brendok was because of Sol in a way. But I also thought about Osha because, you know, a lot of the discussion was about Osha's choice to want to be a Jedi and how that was very disturbing to her family members and to the whole coven, and how disruptive her choice was. And not only that, but also just how influential that choice was then on Sol and on the Jedi Order. You know, I mean, we're seeing the repercussions however many years later, 16 years later, I think they said. So it definitely could have multiple reasons. Thomas, any other thoughts there?
I was just wondering, you mentioned Sol. I wonder why, and this episode doesn't really address it, why he wasn't given a Padawan yet. They make it sound like there's some serious reason why.
Well, I think,
you know,
do you have to be a master to have a Padawan? Or,
well, I thought the process of becoming master, unless this was only a Legends thing, was that as a knight, you successfully trained a Padawan at least once, and then you were elevated. That was one of the things that would get you elevated to master level, but I don't know if that's strictly true anymore, but.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess they only imply, based on that conversation with him and Andara, that, you know, sure, her teaching style is better. She allows Torben to seek answers for himself rather than telling him answers to ease his mind. And so she kind of underscores this lack of maturity in him that for some reason he felt the need to just say, oh, well, we're looking for a virgins. And that's why this planet has so much life. And
yeah, he spills the beans of the secret mission to the kid who's not on the need to know list.
Yeah. So, I mean, and apparently, like, they're not even exactly sure that there is a virgins, because I think Andara says, well, we don't even know why this planet has so much life in the first place.
Yeah, they actually bring up the hyperspace disaster from the High Republic novels.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. And they said that like a century previous, part of the hyperspace disaster had somehow like glassed this planet, just stripped it of all life. And now, incongruously, there are trees and plants and other life forms on this planet. So how can that be? And they say emergence in the Force creates life or has the potential to create life. So they suspect, they don't know, I guess, but they suspect that there's emergence, which they seem to define as like a special place in which there's a great strength or power in the Force.
Mm-hmm.
I remember from the Phantom Menace, the council being surprised that Qui-Gon thought emergence could happen around a person like Anakin. So I don't think that's even in their minds yet. They're just looking for a place. And I started to wonder, too, could the emergence may not be the twins at all, but have to do with that tree?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of, do you remember what it was called? Is that kind of glowing weeping willow tree?
And don't remember, but it was really beautiful. I mean, they set it up to look like a Garden of Eden kind of situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the butterfly creatures and all that.
Yeah, and just how there's this glowing mist, or is the tree glowing? I'm like, is this the two trees of Valinor? Secrets of Middle Earth plug. But yeah, I was starting to wonder, like, you know, did they completely, you know, not to belabor the point here, but miss the forest for the trees? They're like looking for this emergence, and maybe it was right there and they didn't even notice. I don't even know if their silly equipment can pick it up. Kelnaka had basically looked like a metal detector or a minesweeper that he's going around. I don't know what, but that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was really hilarious. It was almost like from a certain point of view, it kind of looked like he was vacuuming the grass. Just the fact that he's a Wookiee and he's using that instrument is humorous.
That was great.
Yeah. So, so we got that backstory, and I think, you know, I recall the very first time we covered this series, I talked about how Sol was like my favorite character thus far after the first two episodes. And now that I've seen this other side of him, I'm like, man, I don't know if I still like him as much, even though, of course, you know, everybody has their flaws and everyone matures. Obviously, he matured over time, at least somewhat. He became a master. And, you know, you think back and the very first, I guess, line of the show, right, was him saying, "Your eyes can deceive you. So
don't trust them."
Don't trust your sight. So that's definitely a lesson he's learned, I think.
And the first lines from characters are often very revealing.
Yeah. So just curious if you guys had a similar experience with Sol. Like maybe he wasn't your favorite character, but just how this episode affected your impression of him as a character.
Well, I mean, for me, I liked him as a character beforehand, and I still like him overall. But my biggest frustration, though, with him is, you know, it's like they definitely made him seem really immature or really unemotional compared to Indara when in this episode, because not only did she say to him, you know, about the Padawan thing, but then she's like, Torben is very disturbed about things. And she's like, no, it's anxiety with him. Don't project, you know, your feelings on with him. And then later on, you know, she talks about him. Okay, yes, I think, you know, about Osha wants to do this. And he's like, yeah, but that's what you want. You know, don't project onto her, you know, so that kind of stuff, too. So I thought that was, you know, interesting and how that worked out with how he came across as being, I don't know, you saw him being emotional as he's hugging May in the prior episode because he thinks that's OSHA and you saved me and all this stuff. So, you know, he's got that emotional side of him, but it also made it seem like, you know, maybe he has an immature emotional side, at least when he was younger. And I don't know. That just seemed.
Yeah, it's like an emotional vulnerability that he has as a Jedi, which is interesting. It's kind of Anakin adjacent or reminiscent of Anakin, you know, just how he allows his emotions to get a hold of him. But Thomas, what about you?
In the premiere, Sol was definitely my favorite character because he seemed to embody like just distilled Jedi-ness, if that makes sense. Like, and he reminded me a lot of Qui-Gon. But it's interesting to see his arc of change now that we've kind of gotten more of his backstory filled in. And I kind of agree with you both that, yeah, he definitely has matured. He's not perfect yet. He still seems to have problems processing emotions. And he still sometimes acts impulsively. But I definitely, you can see how the character has grown to where he is in the present day versus where he was in the flashback time period. And yeah, I just think he's still one of my favorite characters in the show. I just think this hasn't really soured me on him at all. And instead, it's made him a more complex character. You know, I enjoy seeing characters grow and change, even if we're being shown it backwards.
Yeah, kind it was of, backwards. In this way. Maybe that's what got me.
Yeah. But it's like, well, putting it all together in my mind, I'm like, he's got an interesting growth of change. He's got an interesting arc. And I just like the idea that throughout what he's doing, he's trying to do the right thing. But as Indara, who's kind of a good foil for him, because she's always pointing out like where he's even like kind of unconsciously being selfish. Because we all do that. We can all think we're acting selflessly or, you know,
I'm trying to help somebody else.
But they're secretly kind of selfish, you know, motives behind it. We think we're being altruistic sometimes, but it's like, you know, what are we trying to get for ourselves? You know, and in this fallen world, like all good deeds are going to kind of have some element of that. But in this, we kind of see an extreme version of that. He really wants a Padawan. And he's seen an opportunity. Like he said, like, I think he does really care for OSHA and care about her safety. I don't think that's feigned because I think he is such an emotional person. And I can connect with this. I think he's a person who makes emotional connections with other people very quickly. You know, it doesn't take him long to bond with people. He's very empathetic. And being someone who can make those kind of emotional connections very quickly, I think he legitimately cares for OSHA and May to a certain degree. But I just think that he's letting that blind him to create huge blind spots for him.
Yeah. I tell you what, when you brought up Qui-Gon, because I remember that Yi Jung Jae said that he based his character performance or development of Sol off of Qui-Gon. And when I thought back to Qui-Gon after watching this episode, I thought of the scene where Qui-Gon is manipulating the dice in the deal for Anakin. With the Force, he's using the Force to kind of have everything go his way. And you know, that whole concept of, well, I'm freeing this boy from slavery, right? I'm taking him to a better life. Well, he didn't ask the council for that. Nope. You know, I mean, that's something else that Qui-Gon did that perhaps is very soul-like as well. So yeah, this just reminded me of all of that. And again, just a different look on Soul. Now, one thing that I found very strange and confusing was that they just barge into this fortress. Like, he climbs up and, you know, he's doing the spy thing or whatever, but then they just all go there and
yeah,
and mess with the controls and break in.
Yeah, I wanted to see more of Soul playing, you know, the stealth mission in the, like, he's playing Metal Gear or something. Don't get caught, you know, like. But yeah, they just barge into that place. They just tell Kelnaka to hack the door.
Why? I didn't understand why they did that. Is that just like a High Republic, you know, pride of, oh, we are the Jedi and we're in charge of everything?
Cowboy diplomacy, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know
if y'all had... I just wondered if I was the only one that was totally confused by that or not.
I didn't understand it either, because when I was watching it, I'm thinking, then when they show up, and then are they supposed to be are they supposed to come across like, oh, somebody lives here? You know, it's like, you know, it's like the doors are shut. Let's check this place out. You know, it's like, because they're like, oh, we thought this planet was uninhabited. So we just, you know, instead of knocking on the door, we decided to break it open, go in and check it out, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of, that's some of my frustrations with the series. Some of these kind of decisions or the writing and some of that kind of stuff. I'm like, what, you know, to me, it's, I don't know. Like, I would have thought they would have been more, more open to at least trying to get in and like,
oh, and then they say, forgive our intrusion. Yeah. And I'm like, no.
All right.
Why? Why should they forgive your intrusion? You just barged into their home.
I suppose it's just because they, I mean, they were disingenuous, but they also were already taking Soul's word for it that these girls seem to be in danger and, you know, they wanted to really see what was going on. So the only way to do that was to just kind of barge in instead of ringing the doorbell. So...
Oh, and before they even go there, they name drop the Night Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they're like, are these Night Sisters? At which point I then started calling the Brendok witches the Not Sisters. Because they're Night Sisters, but not really. So they're Not Sisters.
That's cool. I like that. So we're inside the fortress. We get to see everything now from a different perspective. And in particular, we see how Mother Anasea gets into Torben's head. So there's a lot of different ways to interpret that. I have to say that I found it to be manipulative, right? Because she underscores his vulnerabilities, first of all. You're the son of paupers. You're trapped on this planet. You haven't completed your training yet. You're still, you know, a Padawan. And then she goes, well, here's what you want to hear, right? You're a strong and good Jedi. You have these natural desires that, you know, are you're suppressing. Like, don't you want to escape? Don't you want to get off this planet? Well, I can help you. And then she's like, over and over and over again, ask me, ask me, ask me. So when I really kind of broke that down, I thought about how that was manipulating him. You know, he's very vulnerable. He's the most vulnerable of the group, right? Obviously, she sees that and she understands that as since he's the Padawan. And so she kind of wears him down and then gives him the illusion that he's making a free choice. Where in reality, she's just really playing on his vulnerabilities. So how did you guys interpret that scene? And what did you kind of find interesting and get out of that?
Well, I thought, my thought was, at least when, well, when she's in his head, you see it, I see it as manipulative. But then when you, then when they're talking and saying, well, if you want your Padawan to, you know, get his mind back or whatever she said exactly, it seemed like she intentionally did it to manipulate him, but then also then to use it as leverage,
yeah,
you know, in the negotiations too. So it was, like it was twofold to, you know, get control of him and then to manipulate him and then to then try to say, okay, you know, don't, this is, if you do this, I can do this, you know, if you try to take my children away, we can do this to your Padawan or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was, you know, once again, it's like, but that's kind of, you know, that's where you like Mother Anisea, and then there's the part you don't like her, you know, it's like, yeah. And it's like, cause then you see, okay, but then again, she's doing it she's making this decision because it's her decision. This is how I need to protect my coven. Mm-hmm. And so in her mind, this is the right way to do it and stuff too. And maybe, I don't know though, what would have happened to Torben if they would have pressed the issue or something like that. I mean, does he just lose his mind? Does he, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know what the next stage was to all that for with him. If he dies, goes into a catatonic state, you know, or whatever. I don't know. It's just, we don't know what.
Yeah.
Well, kind of jumping off that, I was struck by the tragic irony that if Mother Anisea had not manipulated his fears and anxieties like that, and clearly not just in that moment, but planted some sort of lingering spell that kind of goes on, he may not have made that impulsive choice later.
Yeah.
Which sort of leads, like, is that one stone that falls that starts the avalanche of bad things happening? You know, or like, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of the coven need not have died but again, it's unintended consequences. Mother Anisea doesn't realize she's doing something that's going to hurt her coven later.
True.
You know, which I found very, there's a lot of tragic irony in this episode, and a lot of tragic irony caused by people not communicating.
Yep.
They're not communicating. Gosh. The Jedi aren't communicating amongst each other. The Coven are not, because some of them are at cross purposes with one another. The Coven and the Jedi are not communicating. You know, they're just talking at one another,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the communications breakdown, you know, is...
You could have called this episode Communications Breakdown.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How often my husband and I talk about, like, so many problems could just be avoided if people just knew how to communicate better. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, because if she's out there saying, okay, look, I know you want to take these children away from us and test them because you think they're special, but this is how we see it, and you know, we're not keen on this, you know, it's like, and then if the Jedi were saying, but if we do that, you know, it's just like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just everybody plays it so close to the vest, even later on,
right,
when they show When they know Osha, the Coven knows Osha's decision, but she doesn't tell the Jedi right away either. And it's like, well, maybe if you would have told them, at least you could, you know, one person's going home with you. Maybe then that whole thing doesn't break out like that either, you know, but.
Well, that's what you do when you're afraid, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the first theme that I got out of this after I watched this episode was fear.
Yes.
And just what fear can do to people, fear and pride, you know, when you're afraid, right. and you're, like you said, they played it close to the vest because they didn't want to give away too much. They didn't know how much they could trust the other party. So, yeah. So the girls get tested. Well, there's a lot that's going on here. So, first of all, May is tested and she is asked a few questions about ascension and she misquotes Mother Anisea. So the original quote was, ascension is about walking through fear. It is about sacrificing a part of yourself. And again, now that I read this, I'm like, oh, hey, this is very... on theme here. But May's recollection of the quote is, everyone must walk through fear. Everyone must be sacrificed to fulfill their destiny. So, yeah. Mm. Obviously, the Jedi did not do a fact check. They made assumptions. What do you guys think about, like, because they were witches, because they were force users, because they were a coven, mysterious, weird to the Jedi, right? Like, I think there were some underlying assumptions, there were some stereotypes that led to the choices that the Jedi made. And then likewise, there were assumptions that the coven had about the Jedi. You know, like when Mother Anisei is like, oh, the all-knowing Jedi didn't know their surroundings, right? So there's these stereotypes, mm-hmm. underlying assumptions, misconceptions. And then you add into that the human error factor, mm-hmm. that May misquotes Mother Anisei. And then all of a sudden, everything just blows up. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did you guys pick up on that too? Like, I mean, anybody who heard it, who would hear a child say something like that would fear for their well-being, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you're sacrificing children as part of the ascension, you know, versus sacrificing some part of, you know, who you are or whatever it is to go through it, that's a big difference of how to interpret that. Especially when Sol sees the witches chanting as he's after his commando operation early on, you know, it's like, you know, when he's leaving and he sees them chanting before the ascension and stuff, you would think, okay, this, and then this is a sacrifice, you know, and stuff. So yes, they're in danger. And also, since they're the only two children in this group of, you know, adult women and stuff. So it's kind of, I don't know, but then
yeah.
The part of it, but the other part too, then it's like, you know, that whole part about the ascension, and then that means those two can rule. I didn't understand that part. You know, it's like at some point.
Was that from the original stuff that we were told about the ascension? I don't remember, honestly.
I don't recall, but I mean, it makes sense, mm-hmm. now that we know more about them.
They also call the girls the future of our coven.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly? I don't know.
Future rulers, would be the simplest thing, but nothing about this show is that simple. So,
right.
Yeah.
But the whole thing, I mean, then of course, that was the thing too, though. Then Mother Coral has her stereotypes of the Jedi won't warn you before they attack, you know, and it's like, but then you have the Jedi like, no, we won't fight unless we're attacked upon, you know, and stuff, and or we won't pull the lightsaber unless we have to, you know, and stuff. So it's like, yeah, there was just so much, yeah, so many stereotypes or what people thought the other side was. And then, of course, when Sol sees Mother Anisei changing in front of him, he doesn't know what that means. And takes those, you know, and it's like, and who would know, you know, unless you understand what that, the witch's coven and what that entails and stuff. And so it's like, yeah, there's just so much where, oh, this looks like horrible magic, I got to take action now, you know, and then, oh, this, you know. So, yeah, there was just so much, yeah, lack of communication and lack of, but just basic understanding of who you're dealing with as well.
Right. I mean, it's very, very relatable, you know. I mean, we've all known of situations like that, or we've all participated in that kind of drawing assumptions,
mm-hmm.
and then been embarrassed and frustrated later, right? You know, so you can see that in Sol, and yeah. The idea that, you know, when Indara is talking to him and tells him not to confuse what he wants with what OSHA, or what OSHA wants with what he wants. You know, we talked about how important it is to not make those assumptions, not to project onto other people. But I think to me, it really showed that, you know, with Indara being a master and then Sol being a knight at this point, that she had the discernment to go to other people, right? And to really listen to what other people were telling her in order to make a decision. So for me, it just reminded me of when we're in our own journey, to have that good counsel and to have spiritual direction as we're making decisions and we're growing as people, is just super important, you know, and it's part of that maturing process. So, soul is, I think it's interesting. So we talked about Mother Anasea being manipulative. I think soul is also manipulative. When he's speaking with Osha, because he takes her aside by herself and tells her what she wants to hear too. Oh yeah, there's many other children like you with the Jedi. And he starts to entreat her to say what she wants. Well, so you have to be able to say what you want. And she says, well, I want to be a Jedi. And then he coaches her, okay, well, let's go ahead and take this test, right? And say the truth, you know, just like it was manipulative. Not that it was evil, you know, there are certain things that we just need to remember when there's a huge power disparity like there was between him and Osha.
Yeah, child.
That she was very vulnerable.
I don't think he views himself as being manipulative. That's the interesting thing. Yeah, he needs someone from the outside to tell him that, because, you know, in the moment, you're not. Well, of course I'm not being manipulative. I'm just being helpful. You know, it's like...
Right.
I'm being supportive.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. It happens all the time with in real life, you know?
I was wondering, though, when he's doing that questioning, too, and he says, I'm going to take a different tact with Osha, and Indara agrees to it, and he starts asking her those questions, you see... Indara getting like I don't know, is she reaching out with the Force to what to actually confirm what's being seen, so that she knows that that soul is being honest too, you know, because in the beginning
the screen.
He would, you know, right.
Yeah.
Or is she trying to reach into what Osha is and seeing if she does have this ability or something, you know what I mean? I was kind of wondering, you know, what that was, because they zoomed in on her and you can tell she's thinking through something or trying to reach out to determine something. It's not just sitting there passively, but I was just wondering about that when I saw her with that scenario, because then she talks to him later on about how he was coaching her about stuff and all that.
Yeah, I interpreted that facial expression as pain. Like, she was very frustrated because she, I think she knew that Osha was passing the test, and she's like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, yeah, I'm going to have to talk Soul down from, I'm going to have to let him down, you know, like tell him, no, we can't do this. Sorry.
Yeah, so that was my interpretation of that. But, you know, Indara kind of felt like the big sister in this group.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I just loved it when she goes and wants to get the decision of the council, and then she comes back to the rest of them and she's telling them, you know, what they said. They said no, and Torben's like, will they let us come home at least? And she just looks at him and says no. And then he just like, oh, and then he kind of like angstily walks away, you know, stomps away.
He thinks he's going to be spending forever on that planet putting those moss samples into that thingamajig he had. And it's like, I like what he says earlier too, is I don't think we're doing anything meaningful on this mission. And I'm like, that's such a teenager thing to say. You know? Like, sometimes you just have to do work that's not any fun. Grow up. You know, it's like, but they were doing it for, what did they say, 7 months or something on that
planet? 7 weeks.
Weeks. Okay. That's more reasonable. But still, to a teenager, 7 weeks seems like a whole year of your life, you know? Like,
yeah. And he's out there in the rural country, you know, he's not in the big city of Coruscant. So,
right. They're camping out, you know, yeah. Which I thought was cool. Did you guys notice, by the way, in like several of the forested areas, there seem to be like machine parts with plants growing over them?
Mm.
Did you notice that? Yeah, that looked I wonder if that was another reference to like the hyperspace disaster where maybe ships that had been suddenly thrown out of hyperspace had crashed on the planet long ago and left their remains there. Yeah,
probably so. That's really cool. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. Oh, and before I forget, like in the opening establishing shot, I thought I saw Night Sister standing stones, but I could have been, they could have been just rocks, but I was like, and I was watching on kind of a small screen. And I'm like squinting. I'm like, is that like a Night Sister henge? It was like in the first establishing shot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it may be just a visual thing to kind of, you know, witches, you know, force witch. It may have nothing to do with the Night Sisters. But yeah, I wonder if anyone else saw that or if I just imagined it.
But to riff off of Andara, you know, there are probably many cultures that have standing stones, you know, mm-hmm. like so that's really neat. And speaking of other people, other significant people we already know, let's talk about Anakin, because we hear the twins have a high M count. We pretty much suspected that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're told that their symbionts are exactly the same. And I needed a refresher on what exactly a symbiont was.
Right.
So my good friend Wikipedia says symbiosis was a mutually beneficial relationship between living things. Such relationships were described as symbiotic, and the parties involved in the relationship were named symbionts. Mm-hmm. Species in a symbiotic relationship could not live without the other and would die without the partnership. So that I can see why they get the idea that perhaps this is one consciousness that is then somehow put into two bodies, split into two bodies. What do you think all of this information means? And does it affect how you perceive Anakin Skywalker being a virgin in the Force? I know that I had a conversation on, I think it was Discord,
mm-hmm.
with the SQPN Discord, by the way, if y'all want to jump on there, sqpn.com/Discord. But we were having a conversation about this and somebody was like, oh my gosh, like they better say more about Anakin because now this totally changes things. I want to hear what you guys think about that.
Well, first I want to mention the symbiosis thing. The way I took that was, Qui-Gon Jinn explains how midichlorians are symbionts with other life forms.
Mm-hmm.
So that literally, like, you know, and he says the Force would either not exist without the midichlorians, or that life forms wouldn't be able to tap into it without the midichlorians. And so I almost took it to mean that, like, not only are the twins genetically identical, but their midichlorian life forms are identical, which normally wouldn't, because I may be totally wrong on this, like biologist people correct me here, but I was almost thinking it's like, well, like identical twins probably wouldn't have the same exact microbiome, you know, even if they're identical, like the symbionts that live in us in real life,
sense. Yeah,
bacteria.
That's so a good analogy. Like,
yeah, so maybe normally identical twins would not have identical midichlorians. They would be completely different. But in this case, they say the symbiotic midichlorians are identical. And since midichlorians allow you to tap into the Force, and you see consciousness also seems to play a role, I almost feel like that clued them in to, like, they're not normal identical twins where, you know, like from our metaphysical perspective as Catholics, identical twins have two separate souls.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this case, it almost seems to be like they're the same soul in two bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which would explain their ability to, in much earlier episodes, to sort of know that the other was alive, you know, yeah. and to have those very creepy visions.
And so, hear things.
And hear things. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't thinking so much about Anakin. I know I was in earlier episodes when they mentioned the twins being created, because I'm like, oh, you mean the same way Anakin was supposedly created? Because in Legends material, it's heavily implied that the dark side was used to create Anakin in some way. So I'm just wondering how that, if at all, if it ties into what how the twins are created. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, what about you, John?
Well, I wasn't completely sure about the about Anakin Skywalker. I mean, I don't know as much about like Thomas did about the potential how he might have been created. You know, I knew he would, you know, had no father and stuff. But it made me think, though, as I was watching it the second time, and they're doing that little singing rhyme, and it ends with always one, but born as two.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, now I understand why they say that, because they were one. You know, it's like, I just thought, oh, it's just a little twin song. You know, it's like, oh, we're just, you know, twins, but then they never seem to be the same. Because they're always, I want to see the world. I want to stay with the covenant. You know, they always have, yeah. They're like, I don't know. It's like, well, maybe then that's when they're split. Here's the one side of the personality. Here's the other side. But no, that makes, yeah, it's just, but I saw more with that. But then I guess, well, I'm not completely sure about the Anakin side, because I just don't know enough about of that. Yeah. I mean, I know, like I said, but it did make me think, though, and then it makes sense though, because the Jedi are concerned about how these twins were created. Mm-hmm. And if it was with some kind of dark magic, and then if Anakin was done with some kind of dark side magic, you know, or force manipulation, then maybe there is something, because it always seems like the dark side is interested in extending life, creating life, keeping mm-hmm. their life. Mm. And all that kind of, you know, and, you know, not dying and moving on and stuff. It's just, you know, so maybe there's something with that. I don't.
Mm. Yeah, I think maybe more so the person that I was talking to was more concerned about the twins being the result of a vergence in the Force, or being mm-hmm. the vergence in the Force. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, now that we've been talking, that doesn't necessarily need to be the case mm-hmm. in order for everything to make sense in the episodes.
No, yeah.
Right.
So,
well, but I mean, it could be, though. It's like maybe every so many years, like, or generations, you have a vergence in the Force.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was Osha and May. And then later on, it was Anakin. And then later on, who knows? You know, it's like, and then you just keep going. But
yeah. And I guess you could, you know, conjecture that perhaps there was a higher midichlorian count with Anakin than anybody else that had ever lived or existed.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Osha and May are a virgins, like, I mean, clearly they're not as powerful as Anakin.
And people point out like,
teen.
Yeah. And people point out that like, oh, but the Anakin being a virgin in the Force was part of the prophecy, so it has to be unique to him. But I'm like, but remember what Yoda says, a prophecy that misread could have been. So we've never, I think, even been given the full text of this prophecy. So we don't even know what it really says. The Jedi just talk about it. And it's like, I often just wonder, like, are you guys kind of making up this prophecy thing as you go along, or do you just have scraps and fragments like the Dead Sea Scrolls or something, and you're like pasting it together and you're like, oh yeah, this is totally what it means. Meanwhile, you know, it means something completely different. So I don't think we can take things that the prequels say about the prophecy as strictly literal.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Well, before we get too far down the Chosen One prophecy rabbit hole, if you all listening have something that you want to share about that, feel free to email us, starwars@sqpn.com, and we'll see what you think. But let's go ahead and continue with the rest of this episode. But thank you for going down that path with me. The Jedi, you know, go ahead and have this, you know, really bad choice that they make. They go to the fortress. Mei starts the fire. We learn that she didn't mean for it to burn down the whole entire place. poor little girl. She seemed really overwhelmed. We all have those days.
Did I missee this? It almost looks like she starts it by accident. Like, she just waves that book in front of the open flame, and then it kind of accidentally catches fire and is like, oops. Or did I misunderstand that?
I mean, you could probably read it that way. There's a lot of ways you could read it.
Mm.
You know, she doesn't actually verbalize what she was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we have the Jedi confronting the witches. We come with noble intentions.
We come in peace for all mankind.
Oh boy. Yeah. And Mother Anisea has that line. Someday those noble intentions you all have will destroy every Jedi in the galaxy.
That was,
now, there's
that
a
was
prophecy
my,
for you.
That was my, one of my favorite lines of the episode. Yeah.
Why was it one of your favorite lines?
Because it's true. Given what we know about the Clone Wars and the Jedi got involved in the Clone Wars in, from their point of view, completely noble intentions, but it destroys them in the end.
Mm.
You know, I just wondered if, like, you know, there was a little bit of foresight there on Mother Anisea's part.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Well, it all goes haywire, as we know. Mother Coral chooses violence today. Mother Anisea chooses magic, which freaks out Sol. He stabs her. Mei sees a Jedi stab her mother and kill her. Mother Anisea reveals that she was just trying to let Osha go. Then Coral yells, "Fight me," and she's trying to start a fight. She disappears. All of the witches disappear. Then we see them in this trance. Their eyes are glazed over. I interpreted that as like a force projection, kind of like Luke did in The Last Jedi, where he used apparently all of his life force and he died at the end.
Huh.
I don't know if you guys... Maybe, was it just like, because if it was just magic, then why would they have all died, you know?
Yeah. Hmm.
So that was my thought. But Kalnaka gets possessed by Coral, which was kind of fun to see, but also
terrifying.
Terrifying.
Great lightsaber fight, though.
Yeah.
Great just choreography. Just terrific. Very kinetic. I liked it a lot.
Yes. Now, something that I saw afterwards in my research is we all know that Torben gets clawed by Kalnaka.
Mm-hmm.
And in canon, when a Wookiee uses their claws, that's a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to go live in solitude for the rest of their lives if they do that. So,
they can't use their claws on another living being. Yeah.
Yeah. So this shows us why Kalnaka was in solitude. You guys have any other commentary about this fight and the possession and the mess that the Jedi created?
Well, I mean, I was confused, I mean, like, about, and you're right, suggestion for the life force, like Luke, that made the most sense to me, because when, or sounds like a good theory, because when Indara comes, then I'm trying to figure out what does she do to calm down or to calm down Kelnaka and remove his possession. I mean, she puts his hand and then up by his head, and then it's like, I don't know. And then once she does that, everyone's gone. You know, all the witches and stuff. And then I didn't know, though, what she was doing to... I guess there was some explanation for that a little bit with
Man,
that.
This, you know, is Star, like, Wars. There are no explanations.
I mean, it's like, you know...
Maxi Big DeForce. That is the explanation.
Right. Because, but, I mean, But I did like the scene. I liked how it played out. And then I did like how, you know, you see the side of May that she didn't really want to do the whole terrible fire, but it did cause a lot of the damage and stuff. I mean, it wasn't just the,
yeah,
you know, how that worked out. But
it didn't kill her family.
Right.
Which is what Osha's impression is.
Mm. Right. Right, exactly. And then that's where, then, as much as I like Master Indara throughout the episode, then when she says, here, this is what we're going to say, then I'm like, all right, there's an X next to her name now. You know, it's like, and I was like, here's the plus, and now, okay, now we don't, you know, it's like, so it's like, because I do like her character, but then you understand, though, why then May wants to go out and take out these Jedi, too, and what her motivation is.
It was very interesting because I like how she says, Indara says, we'll tell the council the truth.
Yeah.
And they tell the council a version of the truth, but missing a whole ton of context. And I feel like this sets the stage for how a Jedi's Jedi, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, can say, oh, I told you the truth about your father from a certain point of view. I just left out some important facts about him, you know, like him and Darth Vader are the same person. So, you know, I feel like this kind of shows like how maybe that kind of thinking gets institutionalized.
Oh, yeah.
In the Jedi, where it's like, we can tell the truth from a certain point of view when we decide that people don't need to know certain things. We won't lie, but we won't tell the full truth. And, you know, it's always been pointed out, even from the earliest movies, that, like, Obi-Wan is not forthright with Luke. And
yeah.
And I see we're getting more of that here. And I just found that very interesting. That was probably one of my favorite aspects of the episode. Even though it's like, I don't agree with what they're doing morally, right. But I'm like, that's just so interesting. You know, like, yeah.
Right. One thing I did like about the fight scene earlier on, too, with Sol and Mother Coral was after he realizes how, I mean, he killed, you know, Mother Anisea, and then he won't fight her because he realized, you know, the gravity of what he did, and you can see the emotion on his face is, oh my gosh, I killed this person, and I, you know, who knows, I don't know what her intention was. Was she going to try to possess Mother Coral or Torben and try to you know, to get the situation under control, or, you know, because when you see what Mother Coral does with Kelnaka, you know, it seems that's the goal, is when you when you go into that mode, you're trying to, you know, to, you know, stop some, or, you know, take control of something. But I did like seeing Sol's reaction and then how angry Mother Coral was getting, not with him not fighting back. And then, you know, he was just, you could tell he's like, oh, you know, I don't want to. You could tell he didn't want to escalate it further after such a tragic mistake. And that's one thing. And then, of course, she escalates it then by, you know, taking over Kelnaka. And then, well, and Torben escalates it, too, by, you know, getting out his lightsaber more and stuff. So it wasn't all just the witches, but it was just like after his, you know, his thing. But then once again, nobody's talking and saying, oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to do this. You know, it's like, you know, it's just all, okay, you know, let's all be quiet again and assume what the other, we think the other person's thinking, but.
Yeah. I mean, in Indara, as we mentioned earlier, she, at the end of that, she was really, I think, indignant. She was like, well, I told you guys what we should have done and you didn't listen to me. And she got angry. Mm-hmm. And then she talk about pride, you know, here's this person who keeps saying, well, we got to ask the council. And then when it comes to what she has to do because of a mistake that she was, you know, partially responsible for, all of a sudden it's, well, we'll tell them what happened, but we'll decide the version of the truth. And, mm-hmm. and ultimately telling Sol what to do, ask yourself why you made this choice. And that is a very powerful thing to say in and of itself, because oftentimes we don't ask ourselves, why am I wanting to make this choice, or why did I make this choice? You know, Star Wars is really about that. Star Wars is really about choices and how we decide to act and how we decide to use all of the factors that we, you know, all the things we have inside of ourselves, our gifts, our talents, our struggles, our emotions, you know, our spirituality. So ask yourself why you made this choice. I thought that was a really profound piece to include in this. Okay, well, any other observations that you guys want to make? Any other things that you want to cover before we wrap up here?
What did you think about that? Well, I was wondering what you thought about the closing music. Since it wasn't instrumental, it was the Twin Flame song. That kind of threw me for a loop. It's kind of to hear that, you know, like a song like that come across. And it was nice overall, I guess, but it was, I was trying to figure out, as I was looking at the lyrics and stuff, how it all played in, and you could see some of the storyline, I guess, in those lyrics, but...
Yeah, I think when I looked at the lyrics, it seemed to be from the perspective of Mei and Osha, because of talking about blame and do you feel shame when they, or I feel shame when they call me by your name. The whole concept of dying with the other. And yeah, it was jarring at first. I think after a couple of views, I was more accepting of it, because it's not like we haven't had that sort of, you know, popish or rockish or different kind of music in Star Wars, because we have, just during the actual content, you know, as dialogical music. I think that's how it's called when it's actually part of the world. It having the hip hop and R&B elements, I think, is the new aspect to that, which I'm not mad at. I mean, I think if I listened to R&B and hip hop, it wouldn't be as jarring. Like, I just don't normally listen to those genres, so to speak. But yeah, it was interesting. Definitely different.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that hits me with it is, after you have an emotional episode, and then you're watching that, you're and trying to figure out how does this all play in. I'm like, I'm already kind of exhausted with everything that's happened, and now I got to think harder about, okay, how does this play in?
Another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And I was like, instead of just the normal somber music as it heads out or something. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me at the end of, this is another Secrets of Middle Earth plug, at the end of the Two Towers movie.
Right.
They play quote unquote Gollum's song. And if you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh yeah, this is how Gollum thinks about himself and looks at the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I never really realized that until I was listening to the soundtrack one day and decided to really pay attention to the lyrics, you know? So I think it's cool when they can create a kind of end credits music that reflects the world and the story in an interesting way, or a couple of the characters in this case. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, guys?
That's all for me.
Yeah, right. That's it. Yeah.
Well, that was definitely a lot to break down, but I'm sure that there's much, much more. So if any of you listening want to send us your thoughts on this other perspective that we received on episode 7 or anything else Star Wars, questions, comments, it's all welcome. You can email us starwars@sqpn.com or find StarQuest on Facebook, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. You can also leave a comment on our Instagram, where we are at StarQuest Network, or simply write to us on X, where you can find us at SQPN. And guys, we will wrap up our coverage of the Acolyte series next week. Dun, dun, dun. And so you can look forward to that, as well as our deep dives on other Star Wars content, such as the newer animated series, Tales of the Empire. So please make sure to subscribe to Secrets of Star Wars in your favorite podcast app. And while you're at it, subscribe to our YouTube channel, StarQuest Media. And you can find previous episodes at our website, sqpn.com/StarWars. So until next time, John Coral, thank you for talking Star Wars with me.
Thanks. I had a great time.
And Thomas Salerno, great to have you as well.
Thank you so much, Angela. This was great.
Yeah. And once again, I am the one in the middle, the Bendu, Angela Ciolana. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on Star Quest.
Here's another show on the Star Quest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Stargate. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/Stargate.